Good morning, Jack.
You may proceed.
Thank you. I'd like to ask for 2 minutes of rebuttal time.
Two.
May it please the court, my name is Addison Barnhart. I represent the appellant, Joanna Palmer, who is appealing a final judgment order from the Albemarle County Circuit Court. And the main reason for the appeal is that the final judgment order expanded the width of a road that serves Ms. Palmer's property as her driveway. It also serves the appellee's property down the road, and they use that property primarily for logging purposes. Now, the reason that the...
Can I ask you just a factual point? Of the different things the trial court ordered, like the shearing of part of the rock and the widening of the entrance, how much of that is actually on her property?
All of it.
All of it, okay.
All of it is on her property. There was an expansion of from the entrance. I think there's some dispute about how wide the entrance was, but it was created to 40 feet.
Well, you've answered my question.
Okay.
I don't want to take more time of your argument.
Well, the reason that the court did this was solely by virtue of the fact, which was stipulated at trial, that the appellee had an easement by necessity. And our argument is that that decision was wrong, factually and legally. Legally, it was wrong because there is case law, not necessarily in Virginia, but in other states, West Virginia perhaps, that says that you cannot expand the width of an easement by necessity beyond its historic width. In Virginia, every type of easement, from an express easement to a prescriptive easement, the dominant owner, which is the appellee in this case, cannot expand the width of the easement. They get what's there.
What case in West Virginia says that?
Johnson v. Lunsford is that case, Your Honor.
That case says something about width of the road?
It does. Well, width and location. It does say something about location.
Not about width.
Well, I see the two as the same, and I think that that's open for argument. But
actually, in Johnson, the easement was being moved to a completely different location.
That's right. So different.
It had nothing to do with width.
Correct, Your Honor. And in this case, though, I would still say that it is a relocation. The widening is still a relocation. The trucks that the appellee would like to get into their property.
So if someone were, if VDOT were to add a lane to US 64, you'd say they relocated US 64?
Well, that's a taking issue, I believe.
No, I'm just talking about the use of English words. I don't get the distinction you're drawing. I don't get the fact you don't draw a distinction between relocating an easement and widening an existing, presently located easement. But you seem to be treating them both analytically the same. Am I misreading you?
No, you're not. That is, so the case that was Shooting Point, which is a Virginia case, that is an express easement case, so slightly different. However, the court in that case said that a relocation was a shift in the road of 10 feet. This is a shift in the road of 10 feet, which is what the appellee would like to do.
Easements and easements by necessity are treated completely different in law.
They are, Your Honor. I think in the way, they are different things. And an express easement is a writing, and an implied easement by necessity has no writing. I think an easement by necessity can become an express easement. That's what happened in this case with the other owners down the road. I think they're related. That's what our argument is, and closely related.
Counsel, let me rephrase the argument. It is not the argument that when you have an easement of this nature, which allows the appellee's parcel to have economic value, that you can't expand it to maximize that economic value?
That's a friendly
question, by the way.
But in this case, it's not necessarily... I think that's half the case. I mean, I think that the final judgment order goes too far. That's basically our argument. They can log already. They can use the road for timber purposes already. And to take it to the most extreme, the largest vehicle that I can really think of right now, a tractor trailer, and to get that down this country lane with a dirt lane, that's... if they can already log, I think that that is enough. That's how they use the property.
Now, if the fulcrum is essentially maximizing economic value, are you able to bring any cases to us that deal with the expansion of an easement in order to maximize economic value? I'm going to ask the same question of your opponent.
I can't think of any offhand right now, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the maximizing the economic value, and that's one half of this story and one half of this case. The other half of this case is the burden on Ms. Palmer. We have the dominant owner that wants to do what the dominant owner would like to do, says it's reasonable, and it probably is, but in this case, the trucks cannot fit. And so there's already a burden on Ms. Palmer's property. And this is now an additional burden to widen it by so many feet, to remove trees, to remove bedrock. And so I think that I'm asking this court to look not only at what the appellee would like to do with the road, but also the burden on Ms. Palmer. And all of our case law in regards to easements considers the burden, and there's throughout our case law in Virginia the idea of this additional burden that is normally not looked upon very disfavorably.
If the original easement by necessity had occurred because logs were being taken out of the forest by a single horse, a log was roped to the horse, and all that was necessary for that was 3 feet, would your position be the same, that easement of necessity may not change over time whatsoever? You've got 3 feet and you have to log by a horse and a rope for the rest of its existence.
That question was asked by the trial court, and I represented the appellant of the trial court. And my answer then was strictly, no, they can't widen. I think that I would like to...
That's very consistent. I think you'd have to say that because you've taken that position as a matter of principle.
That's right. However, I've had a lot of time to think about this since then, and I think that...
Particularly since the trial judge was unpersuaded by it.
yes, sir. And so I've been thinking about the horse trail question for a long time, and honestly, it's hard for me to imagine that in real life, but I assume that it can happen, that it is possible for a landlocked parcel to have a walking lane to a state road, and that's been used, and that's an easement by necessity. So, hypothetically, if that were the case, I think that, the easements by necessity talk about getting access to a state road. I would probably be able to concede that you need, and that talks about an automobile. And then you need an automobile, so larger than 3 feet, you would need enough for...
So if that's the concession that you're willing to make, I suspect that you would say that the easement can be widened with the concept of reasonableness implied.
I think that that is what this case really is all about. How much is too far?
Let's establish the principle first.
Yes.
Is that what you are saying, that it may be widened over the course of time based upon the concept of reasonableness? Yes or no?
I think small modifications, yes. Very, very, very small.
We're going to get there, but we got to get to yes or no first. Yes or no?
Yes.
All right. So then the question is reasonableness to whom? To the person who enjoys the dominant estate or the servient estate, or is it a balancing test?
It's all balancing. I think all of the authorities talk about a balancing act. The appellee quotes the restatement third, which is of real property, which starts to change that idea a little bit, of a fixed location, a little bit, saying mainly that the servient can move. If it's burdening their property, if it's too close, they might have the power to unilaterally relocate the easement. So I think there's some reasonableness on the servient owner. And though it's not what I said at the trial court, I think there is some reasonableness when you're talking about needing to get an automobile down a road.
Let me take this one step further, just one at a time, like this. All right, so if, in fact, it's a concept of reasonableness and it takes into consideration the needs and conditions of both the dominant estate and the servient estate, then this would be a matter of fact reviewed by this court on the grounds that it would have to be plainly wrong or without evidence in the record to support it. And that's where we get, right?
Yes.
All right, so focus on that as the standard. Where is the trial judge on a matter of fact plainly wrong or without evidence to support her decision?
With every single expansion that the trial judge made on this Palmer's property, in terms of, in this property, and we've talked about reasonableness, but I think that it's quite reasonable to say that this road has been used by the appellee for close to 60 years without problem, without issue. They've logged using this road without problem, without issue. Ms. Palmer has lived on this property and owned it for 44 years. I think those are incredibly credible facts, and she testified at length at trial about the invasion of privacy that would incur from her country lane being opened up to a commercial entrance that is only going to be logged every 25 years.
But do you, in your understanding of the appellate standard review, do you realize that the seven of us actually could agree with you if we were chancellors hearing the case ourselves as a trial judge? But that doesn't make another trial judge who sees the same series of facts and makes the same balancing judgment call differently irrational or plainly wrong or outside the bell-shaped curve of reasonableness. It just means reasonable people can disagree on these kinds of situations. Isn't that the heart of this case? This is a judgment call made by a trial judge, and you want the appellate bench to substitute what you're anticipating our judgment might be for his or hers.
When it comes to, I think one of the cases I quoted in my talking about the standard of review, and when you're looking at what the additional burden test is, that it is a matter of fact that you can review it de novo to say, is it a burden or not? Is it an additional burden? And that comes down to a legal determination. And I think that there's also a legal determination to look at the other case law that's already established. The appellee says there's no case law, but I think that the cases I've cited say that there is firm case law throughout the country.
Actually, there's a firm case in Virginia called Keene that you haven't addressed yet.
Yes, so that is the case. Sorry.
That case goes directly to the economics question.
Keene said that the issue with Keene was whether the servient owner wanted to prevent coal from being hauled across their property. That's a use issue. I don't believe this is the physical dimensions of the easement, not the reasonable use. We conceded that, and I believe hypothetically, if the terrain of the house were different, there would probably not be an issue here because you could get tractor trailers through, but that would be allowed. That's a reasonable use of a road, but in this case, it's not because of the burden that it adds. Keene, I think that this case.
Well, actually, what we said in Keene, the prevailing view in this country. A way of necessity is not limited to such use of the land as was actually made and contemplated at the time of the conveyance, but is a way for any use to which the owner may lawfully put the granted land at any time.
Yes, ma'am. And use is...
So how do you distinguish your situation from...
Keene says nothing about expanding, and the issue was not before the court whether they could expand against the will of the servient owner to actually use coal. The issue there was, can I get paid for the coal? Can I stop the lessees from using the coal, from using this property? And can I stop them from using coal? None of those issues are here. Ms. Palmer is not trying to stop the appellee from using the property for timber purposes or using the easement for timber purposes.
Counsel, we've been dealing with reasonableness. This is an easement by necessity. Is that correct?
Yes.
So does not the term necessity also imply necessary?
It does, Your Honor.
And the legal standard, therefore, would actually not be one prong of reasonableness. It would be two prongs, reasonable and necessary. Is that correct?
It is.
Would both prongs have to be met in order for the trial judge to be affirmed?
I believe it would, Your Honor.
And is it necessary for the easement to be expanded in order for the appellee to make an economic profit?
No, it wouldn't.
And in fact, did the appellee use 10-wheeled trucks in order to timber other parts of his land?
It did.
Did the appellee, to the best of your knowledge, or does the record reflect whether the appellee lost money? by using 10-wheel trucks?
It's not in the record.
Does the record reflect whether the appellee was not able to be competitive in the marketplace by using 10-wheel trucks?
It's not in the record.
Okay, thank you.
I thought it was. I mean, I thought there was extensive testimony about the fact that the sawmill operations have changed in terms of how they operate with these different size logs, and there was the expert on the industry as well as Mr. Yancey, who went on at length about you can't make any money on these things now, and you can't even find sawmills that'll take these kinds of logs if you have to use 10-wheel truck.
If I can answer the question.
Absolutely, go right ahead.
Thank you. The road was being used for logging during the trial by another neighbor. And I think that the issue was we can log it, we've logged it before, we can get a higher profit margin if we were able to use tractor trailers, which comes directly at the expense of the Serbian owner who gets nothing from this.
You had wanted to reserve 2 minutes, and there are things that I can do from time to time to help you, but when my colleagues take up all of your 2 minutes, that's not one of those times. But I note that Justice Mims used your time very well.
He did. Thank you very much.
May it please the court, my name is Alex Burnett, and my co-counsel and I, Andy Matthews, represent the appellee, R.A. Yancey Lumber Corporation. Your Honor, I'm just going to jump right in and answer some of these great questions that have been asked, because I think that if you read very carefully Smith and Keene, I think all of the answers to these questions can be found in Smith and Keene. I'm going to work backwards. One question that Justice Mims just asked was, is it two prongs? Is it reasonable and necessary? Smith says no. If you read Smith carefully, reasonable qualifies necessary. It's a reasonable necessity. And Smith talks about what that means. Smith talks about how it's not an absolute necessity. It's not. It's a practical necessity. It's a reasonable necessity.
For the reasonable enjoyment of the land.
That's right.
Not just access.
That's right. And there was an important issue that came up in the Smith case that I think sheds light on these issues too, particularly on the economic issues. In Smith, the court found that there was another way. There was another way that that the plaintiff could have accessed his property. It was over a fairly rugged mountainous terrain. And this is 1925, so it's a long time ago, but even back then, the court recognized the economies of it all, that to build this road over this mountain terrain was impractical, and the cost to do so would be significant and would potentially exceed the value of the timber or the value of the land. And so Smith specifically said it's not about necessity. It's about reasonable necessity.
Okay, let's apply that to your facts. The timbering that was done with the 10-wheel trucks, was that by your client?
There was evidence that my client timbered small portions of its property in the 80s using what was available then, 10-wheel trucks.
And prior to this case, when was the last time that your client timbered any of its property utilizing this easement?
The evidence at the trial court was that it was about 30 years ago. It was in the mid-80s.
There was nothing more recent than that?
There was not, because they had to allow, I think back then it wasn't all forest land. There was some farm too. They planted pines in the 80s. They had to allow those to grow.
Counsel,
they had to allow the other timber that was cut to regrow.
Am I mistaken, or was there testimony about damage that was more recent than that?
So there was some testimony that one of the neighbors used 10-wheel trucks.
And the testimony, that was my question. Has there been timbering by your client or others recently?
Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't understand. There is an adjacent property. So this road is used by...
And this easement was used by that adjacent property?
Yes, this road is used by three or four different owners in the area.
And 10-wheel trucks were used?
They were.
And was there any testimony that the timber that was taken using the 10-wheel trucks was not saleable due to economic factors?
There was no evidence like that.
So we can presume that the neighbor was not trying to lose money, but we have no evidence about whether the neighbor made money or lost money by using 10-wheel trucks.
There was no evidence to that fact, but there are two distinguishing pieces of information about what was timbered on the neighbor's property. Number one, it was a very small amount of land that was timbered. And number two, we don't know what was timbered, but there was evidence presented by both Mr. Yancey and by our expert Larry Ensley that you can't practically timber pines using a 10-wheel truck because pines are tall and you have to chop them up so much that you can't get them out on a... You need to get them out on an 18-wheeler. You can't get pines out on a 10-wheel truck.
You need to get them out on an 18-wheeler to maximize the value of the pine boards.
That's true.
If your pine boards are shorter, they are still marketable, but they are marketable for less money. Correct.
That's true.
Okay.
But more importantly, Your Honor, this is 317 acres of property. Mr. Ensley testified at length as a highly qualified expert that it's impractical to timber 318 acres of property with a 10-wheel truck.
Counsel, what would be the limiting principle? What if the dominant estate owner decided that it was necessary and practical for them to use an even bigger truck requiring even wider access? Could they go up to her front door and that would be practically reasonably necessary?
Or they want to build a Six Flags amusement park. I mean, I know you can keep taking this, and so we have to draw a line somewhere.
Yes. It's purely a question of facts in the case, facts and circumstances, and I think it would be difficult to go in.
Isn't it better to say
right
it's
now,
purely a question of a judgment call? It's not so much sitting around analyzing 3% profit margin versus 5% profit margin. It's a judgment call. We're judges who have been trained to make judgment calls on concepts as ambiguous as reasonableness are allowed to make the call. And if appellate judges think the call is just absurd or plainly wrong on the face of it, no reasonable judge could have made that call. So the Six Flags, create a uranium mine, that would be absurd, probably, to 90% of the appellate judges. The question is, going from 10-wheel trucks to 18-wheel trucks, is that differential in use absurd for purposes of appellate review? Isn't it really nothing more complicated than that?
That's exactly right.
Counsel.
The evidence...
With all due respect for my very learned colleagues, Justice Powell's question has never been answered. I'd like to hear the answer to her question.
Whether if they felt like they needed bigger trucks, whether they could go
right. It had nothing to do with Six Flags, and it had nothing to do with uranium mines. It had everything to do with just how wide can a truck be and how many wheels can it have to bring timber out in order to maximize profits. And that's an important issue for us rather than for the trial court.
Justice, it's not about... This case is not about economics. It's about practicability.
How does one measure practicability other than by economics?
Well, because to timber 317 acres of land with a 10-wheel truck, it would take you
decades. Why does one timber land if not for economics?
Well, that's true, but it would take you an inordinate amount of time to do it with a 10-wheel truck.
Thereby reducing the value of the product that you are taking to market.
But also inconveniencing everybody around you, damaging the road. You're taking twice as many trips up and down the road with a 10-wheel truck.
How does it inconvenience everyone around you? What's the inconvenience that you're speaking of?
Because instead of having instead of having trucks going up and down your road for a year or two, now you've got them going up and down your road for twice that long or even longer.
But isn't that a calculation that the plaintiff in this case is permitted to make to determine her own ability to endure inconvenience?
Well, the trial court in this case found that timbering 317 acres with a 10-wheel truck was not practical.
Well, now we're back. We've just completed the circle, because the question is practicability economics, and that goes back to 2 minutes ago. So I'll let you complete your argument.
Thank you.
Well, but in the answer to that question, and I'm not predicting what the answer ought to be, but in the answer to that question, there are all factors. I mean, economics, inconvenience, neighbors, Ms. Palmer, Mr. Yancey, they're all factors, aren't they?
That's right. It's a judgment call about what is not absolutely necessary, but what's reasonably necessary for the enjoyment of the Yancey property.
Let me ask a question about Keene. On a read of it, Keene does seem to support your position. But I'm struggling with two terms in Keene, and it's from this sentence. By the weight of authority in America, the limits, that's the first term with which I'm struggling, of the way are to be determined simply by the needs of the land at the time of the creation of the way. But the scope of the way may increase to meet the increased necessities of the property. Limits and scope. Can you help me with that? And it seemed to me, to telegraph to you where I'm going, that Keene talked about the scope in the context of, can they also haul coal products along with surface products, the scope being, as counsel said, the use of the land.
There's another word in that's used a lot in Keene too, and that's the word use. And I believe, based on a reading of Keene, that when the court was talking about what could be hauled, it was talking about the use of the property. And I would argue that scope is larger than that. And when Keene, when the court in Keene said the scope may be increased to meet the necessities of the property, scope is not just talking about use. If they meant use, they would have said use. Scope is broader than that. It's talking about the size, the distances, the size of the easement itself.
What limits? Is that larger than scope?
I think limits is, yes, limits is larger. Limits is everything. What's also important in Keene is this constant use of future tense. At any time, may be adapted, meet the increased necessities of the property. Keene is clearly telling us that an easement by necessity can change. And so when you put together...
But the question is, change in what way? Does it change with regard to what you haul over the way? Or does it change with regard to you taking up your neighbor's yard? Which is why these terms of limits being set at the time of the creation and scope are boggling my mind.
Right. Well, I think if you go back to the fact that that Keene uses both the terms use and scope, they're not interchangeable. They're intentional. When the court says scope, it means something more than limits.
Then use.
Right, then use. And Mr. Keene tried to limit the scope of the easement to what was the historic scope of the property. Back in 1895, when the properties were first partitioned, and the court disagreed with Keene.
But what Keene was talking about, what can you haul over my road, over the easement? That was the issue. And so if you say he was trying to limit the scope, He's trying to limit what you can haul over the easement.
He was trying. That was the issue in that particular instance, was whether they were hauling coal or something else. But I think the opinion is broader than that, because the opinion talks about the scope of the way. And it makes sense, because to Justice Lemon's hypo earlier, if that weren't the case, then this road, think about the facts in our case. This road was, this property was landlocked in 1828. If we were limited to what was available in 1828, the R.A. Yancey would be forced to timber its property using a horse and a wagon. And that certainly can't be...
And so we come back to the question, counsel. I don't disagree with you that a horse pulling one piece of wood may not be the limiting principle. But I do come back to my earlier question, what is the limiting principle as you see it?
Your Honor, it's a judgment call. The trial court heard 3 days' worth of evidence, heard a lot of evidence from our expert witness, and made a judgment call at the end of it about what was reasonably necessary. There was virtually no evidence to the contrary. Ms. Palmer had opportunities to put on her own expert. She didn't do that. The only evidence that she put on were her opinions or her objections to the use of modern-day technology and her lay opinions that the road was adequate as it is. But
did she object to 10-wheel trucks?
She didn't.
Are 10-wheel trucks part of modern technology?
No, I think 10-wheel trucks are the technology of the 80s. And keep in mind, too, there was lots of evidence that these 10-wheel trucks caused a lot of damage because the road as is was not adequate for the 10-wheel trucks. There was lots of evidence to that effect, and
that the road was damaged by the Campbell's timbering using the timber trucks.
That's right, exactly. The road as it is now is not adequate for that.
The question of whether the trial court's order was plainly wrong. The trial court gave to the Yanceys the rule that they may modify the easement as is reasonably necessary. So do I read that to mean that now Yancey gets to determine how far they take this out within their discretion as to what's reasonably necessary?
No, Your Honor, that's a good question, but one of the things the trial court tried to do was be very specific so that there wouldn't be a dispute about what Yancey could and couldn't do. And so the order is very specific about where Yancey can make changes and what Yancey can do. And if Yancey wants to do something outside the confines of the specifics in that order, they would have to go back and try to get some direction from the court. And as a practical matter, that, you know, it's taken us 3 years to get to this point and countless dollars, and so I don't think that's...
Well, she certainly gives limiting principles in paragraph 19. Currently, they may do these things, but paragraph 18 seems to be broader than that. Yancey may maintain, improve, repair, widen, and or modify the easement as is reasonably necessary now or in the future for the lawful use and enjoyment of the Yancey property.
That's almost a direct quote, I think, out of Keene, and I think the point of that paragraph is to say that it's the court made findings in the order about what's reasonably necessary now. If that changes in the future, it's not like an express easement or a prescriptive easement where you're necessarily stuck with what you have, but you would have to go back to the court and get additional guidance or additional authority to take it beyond what's in the confines of the court's order.
All right, thank you. While I'm not compelled to do this, from time to time I have to exercise a little bit of discretion. Obviously, the court is very interested in the arguments of counsel. Mr. Barnhart, you have one more minute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Barnett said it was the paragraph 18 is almost a direct quote from Keene, but Keene does not use the word widen anywhere in it. And that is what this case is about. So paragraph 18 says that they can expand the easement now or in the future. The stipulation was that the sole issue for the court was both the size and the scope. That is in the stipulations. The scope is what the trial court focused on. The size is what we were trying to get them to focus on, and it never happened. The issue, I think, in terms of 1828, and you can't, they didn't have cars then, so how do you make it bigger? You're stuck with what you get. Neighbors, I think, and this is all over my brief, it relies on implied consent. What is the consent between the neighbors in terms of where the road's located, what it is? We've had this road for over 60 years, and I think that that is what shows what the neighbors have agreed on.
All right. Thank you very much. Counsel, thank you for your arguments. Very interesting case. Appreciate your work. The next two cases that the court will hear have been combined for the sake of argument. Go ahead and clear.